I'm gonna lean in like this.
Okay.
Like a chubby Genghis Khan in cargo shorts.
I'm gonna tent my fingers and look earnestly toward you.
I want that. I want pontification. All right, that's
good. Cool.
Really, pontificator's basement.
You know, John.
Thank you. Everyone, this is a, I don't want to call it a bonus episode of Papa's Basement. I feel bad that my recording schedule is so irregular that you're like, oh, a second episode within a 7-day span. What did I do?
Well, it's like you're like Jay-Z and Beyonce. They just like drop shit.
Random
albums. No precursor, no heads up. It's like, boom, we're dropping shit, deal with it.
I can only assume Seinfeld would have been a much bigger hit if it operated on a similar paradigm.
Right. It's like, hey, there's a new episode, good luck.
Not just every Thursday night, 9 p.m. that I look forward to it all week. Fucking Wednesday, 11:30 a.m.
We've got a new episode.
I flip away from Price is Right while I'm sick from school. I'm like, holy shit, they're in a Chinese restaurant.
That's right. They're all talking together.
When are they going to leave? They're not.
They're going over the menu again.
Hot ride. All right, so we are here in the den, the lair of Sean Westfall, my improv cult leader.
It's thank you. I appreciate being.
You've been upgraded from friend.
I appreciate. My God, friend is that how we ladder up in relationships?
Yeah, at a certain point.
You know, I used to consider you my best friend, but now if you offered me Kool-Aid,
now I'm just willing to kill and be killed in your name.
I would drink it. Yeah, cool.
Show's website inpapasbasement.com. Every episode we've ever done is there, and stalk us on Twitter. The links are going to be on inpapasbasement.com. Sean has some big things on the horizon. There's not much that happened in my life since the last episode. I watched Room, and I rolled my eyes at Room. We'll get to Room in a second.
I can't wait.
No, who can? I mean, it's a heartwarming story about a mom trapped in a shed with a rape baby.
Yeah. I mean, what more do you want? I mean, if that doesn't say Hallmark card on it, I don't know what does.
So. I would like the Lifetime version of Room. Where the man breaks in, and in the movie Room, Bree just gets raped while the kid sits in the closet and watches the rape. But in the Hallmark version,
God,
there'd be a lot of cheesy dialogue.
Man.
And, you know, like 4 hours in, we'd be like, he's going to get his someday.
Right.
He's so mean to her. it just made me laugh because I realized how in line with that film my life is. Not that I've captured someone, but I was watching it. And I'm like, you know, the room, the titular room is bigger than my room. And she's just sitting there moving around while watching TV. And I'm just lying in my bed watching TV because my room's so small, I can't really sit elsewhere. So I'm like, who's got it worse?
You wonder if, like, here in D.C., when people are like, you know, real estate and rental properties are a contact sport, you know? And, like, they watch that movie, they go, you know, I know she's getting assaulted.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad room. It's free.
A skylight.
That's right, you know?
God. Yeah, her kid seems very obedient, very loving.
Exactly.
Not a mouthy kid at all in that film.
No, not at all.
So we will do a little Room talk, because, again, that's my life. There's just, I can bring to you a film I saw on Netflix. That is how devoid of content. Otherwise, I can tell you about how I drove around for 5 hours last night, letting people into their houses who locked themselves out. It's the same story over and over. Doesn't get better. I have to get lubricants on my hands each time, liquid silicones, your WD-40s. So that'll no doubt collect in some organ and give me cancer.
We have so much in common with that.
Yeah.
So,
But I'm Sean right now is going, you know, as my voice reflects it, I'm giving the gravitas that it needs. Sean's going through some depression right now.
That's right. Yeah.
And then
he's
off to Burning Man next week.
Yeah, after this, therefore because of this. Post-hoc, ergo propter hoc.
Exactly. German, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Up in my head again, you know, worrying a lot of mental, emotional, and even physical energy about things that are A, out of my control, and B, forecasting in terms of narratives about outcomes and what's going to happen, not being present like I should be. So yeah, it's reared its ugly head again. So
I've been there where I worry about things out of my control.
Right.
And I sat down and forced myself to watch all of Lost before someone could spoil it for me. That's I was proactive about it.
Yeah, you know, we are in a saturated media milieu these days. And I wonder, you know, it's funny because depression has become more prevalent. And again, maybe it's just being more openly talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't help but wonder, you know, if you got depressed to the state that a lot of people are indicating they're getting depressed these days, like back in like the 60s and 70s, the only options were NBC, ABC, and CBS, and, you know, your local, and then later your local PBS channel. And, you know, whatever was on at that time was what was supposed to, you were relying on to A, entertain you, get you out of your head.
And, I love how even back then it was only TV that could save us.
You'd go to a movie and you'd sit in a movie theater mm-hmm. for hours upon end, which of course costs money. At least broadcast TV was, you know, was free.
I mean, you could have talked to a loved one, but really.
Nobody talked back then.
Yeah.
If they talked about it, we probably would have known about depression back then, right? But yeah, I think, so you're sitting there going, oh God, I feel terrible. My life is awful. Let me turn on. Oh good. My Mother the Car is on TV.
What the fuck was My Mother the Car?
On all my problems.
I pride myself in being like a borderline autist
right. That
knows a lot of TV that I shouldn't. But what the fuck was My Mother
shit.
The Car?
Oh, wait a minute. Howdy Doody is on. A stringed puppet, a marionette is going to pull me out of my...
Was there an actual car?
I don't remember. I think from what I understand, and uh-huh. by all means, listeners of Papa's Basement, Google this right now.
Huge Venn diagram overlap with fans of My Mother the Car.
My point is, it's this information is readily accessible. So mm-hmm. please, if I discover I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But my understanding of the premise of the show was how do we get here? But B, my understanding of the premise of the show was. That a man who was very close to his mother died, and her spirit inhabits the car that he happens to own.
Oh, man.
And so that's was My Mother the Car. The guy who was in it was the guy who ended up playing, I'm almost certain, please forgive me if that's right, the guy who played Herman Munster, that actor,
Fred Armisen.
No, yes, Fred Armisen.
the dude who was the judge in My Cousin Vinny.
Exactly, him. By the way, did you know that that guy...
Was a car.
I found this out recently. I don't know where I was Googling this or something. He was like a Yale graduate. Like,
really?
Like super intelligent, super intellectual... And, you know, and that voice, that's sonorous voice that, you know, that he was equipped with made him approach, you know, performing and acting. And, of course, what does he get cast as but a guy in makeup playing a monster who's married to Olivia de Havilland?
So. I don't want to brandish my lefty bona fides here, but... What is it about a man being a Frankenstein that made you think he couldn't have gone to Yale?
No, you're right. There I go.
Just blackening
an entire species of human beings.
Ignorance,
created by
yeah.
by other human beings, and assuming, of course, that they would be not as intelligent as the human being or human beings who created.
My Mother the Car, by the way, sounds like Stephen King's Maximum Overdrive.
Exactly.
Like if it went wrong.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, that TV was a lot more uplifting, the content back then. We didn't deal with the darkness.
I'm not saying it was uplifting. I'm saying that if you were in the position that many fighters have, your options were limited. Like, you couldn't stream 10,000 hours of whatever the most popular uplifting TV show is. You know,
It's Always Sunny.
Touched by an Angel. You know,
gotcha.
You couldn't stream Touched by an Angel. You'd have to watch whatever was coming at you. With no other recourse. I'm surprised there weren't more suicides back then.
Oh, yeah, and it's funny that I blathered on and stupidly said TV was more uplifting, because I'm now thinking of an example. My mom was watching an old film on TCM the other day. I don't know what the hell it was. It was black and white, so it probably they owned slaves to make that film.
Right.
And an old father was like, talking about, just casually, like, well, I'm going to beat you with my shaving strop. You know, the leather piece that they used to sharpen
straight razors with.
That you would, you know, mangle someone to Steeler's wheel with. And there was no recognition of, like, it's horrible that on, like, this frozen pond where the entire town is gathered, father has just casually said he's going to beat the shit out of his son with a piece of leather.
Right.
He's just like, no, Pop, it's been broken for weeks. Like, and then he pulls out the safety razor he was going to get his father for Christmas. That was the new technology. Like
so we have, like, the gift of the Magi, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to beat you with a strap, but I saved my money to buy you a new razor blade.
That firing pin rusted out weeks ago, Pop. You can't kill Sparky. So, okay, you're going through it.
Right.
And what I'm hearing is it's because you don't have Hulu and Netflix and Acorn.
That's the only reason. My life would be so much better if I could afford and actually paid for those subscription services. Yeah. So
what is stressing you out? Anything you want to share? Anything that's... I want to hear what's out of your control, and then I want to make it sound in your control so at least this depression is justified.
Well, yeah, I'm just, you know, the theater is just a constant source of low level anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's just always.
And the name of the theater is the Millstone.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Around my neck. Yeah. Yes.
The albatross.
Albatross. But yes, it's. Thank God we brought it back to a Coleridge poem, because that's my wheelhouse. It's just a constant state of low level anxiety and, you know, trying to do it all, on my own, failing miserably, realizing that there's things that need to be done there and steps that need to be taken to sort of grow it, and, you know, not being able to take those steps because I'm not motivated to, but because I'm just one person who's trying to manage all these things. You know, I posted something on Facebook recently, just in passing. I found some sort of inspirational quote that says something like, you know, if you work hard, you'll be successful, and that's a doggerel version of what I posted. But I no longer believe that anymore. I don't believe that the harder you work.
Oh, I mean, what's the old saying? If it was based on how hard you worked, every Mexican lawnmower would be a millionaire.
Oh, yeah, exactly, right. Yeah, again, nobody works harder in this country than the immigrants. And, you know, many of them still have not found recompense for or options out of their lives.
Sadly, they found Micah Pence.
That's right. I work my ass off. I mean, I don't think I've ever worked harder in my life. And it's just, the problems and challenges with it are constantly top of mind, and, you know, things just seem to get, and again, this is the way I'm reading it. I'm sure that other people in my life would say, that's just the way you're reading it, but it seems to be getting, you know, bleaker. It just seems to be,
really?
Getting, yeah, it's just like you go, I don't know why I'm doing this. It's also, you know, it's, but also part of it is me. This is something that I've been passionate about for most of my life. Ever since discovering it, I've been very passionate about improv and performing, and not necessarily performing.
Great art form.
Yeah, it's a great art form. And what I'm coming to understand is even people who perform it aren't as passionate about it as I am.
No, it's like a higher calling to you.
Yeah. And so they aren't as committed to it. And I don't just mean to our theater. I mean...
I want names. Which students have let you down?
Well, where do I begin? Former L.A. Laker Norm Nixon, for one. Okay, he's just not into
improv. Norm, you're on watch.
I don't understand why Norm Nixon is
put you on blast, dude.
But yeah, it's just this idea that I'm really passionate about it and want to see it succeed, and not only I want to see improv succeed. And you can sort of sense that the bubble has burst where improv is concerned, and understandably so. Part of it is because of schmucks like me.
Yeah.
And part of it is because people just there are, the, you know, and that's the nature of comedy and things that make you laugh. It's just moving into a different era.
I don't know if improv has ever been bigger, and I want to clarify, improv is when people film themselves playing Fortnite.
That's right. Yes.
And share that.
That's exactly what I mean. And it's
improv is massive, dude.
You are sounding like a buffoon right now. I do not know why I'm worried because I'm an idiot.
Okay.
I'm not reading the sign.
Woo! All right. Man.
Yeah, have we talked about this before? I feel like we've talked about this.
Literally every episode. Just one of us is depressed. We talk about
the theater. No, but you mean like how improv the culture is changing. Have we talked about this before?
I don't think so. So
yeah,
please.
It's just a sense that a really good friend of mine is heavily involved in the New York scene and has been there for the last, 10, 12 years.
How is Whoopi?
Whoopi's doing great. Cool. She sends her love, by the way.
You're so candid. Thank you for being so candid.
Yeah, you're right. But he said, that when he was first teaching, the students in his classes would just rave. They would be on YouTube and they would watch, some of the shows that you'd see at UCB, some of the great troops that were there, like the Stepfathers or Mother or troops like that, and they all knew about that, and that's what made them laugh. And he said that something's happened over the last 4 or 5 years, and that students coming up maybe are familiar with improv, but they say, I don't, at least in the more candid ones say, I don't consume improv comedy the way I used to, the way I did when I was 17 or 18 or in high school. Nowadays what makes me laugh is like watching a YouTube video where two guys just punch each other in the balls.
Do you have a URL?
Yes.
Sounds incredible.
Guys punching each other in the balls. I think there's a whole channel of it, right? And he says that this is just you can lament that. Or you can just understand that this is the way that, comedy is changing. That, like, even the bar is higher. People are much more.
Yeah, who can top the ball punching?
Yeah, well, but I mean, even the comedy terrain. I mean, so many people are on Twitter and being funny on Twitter and gaining platforms that way.
It's incredibly congested.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll say this as a guy that wanted to do radio for a very long time.
Right.
Like, I grew up listening to Howard Stern, Don and Mike. That is the reason I do this right now.
Right.
And right when I started getting into professional radio around 2007, 2008, that was when the radio market collapsed.
Right.
And you simply... I would say like 20 years ago, 30 years ago, the way it worked was, in theory, you'd be a DJ or you help out at a shit level market.
Right.
Then you'd get to a mid-level market. Every time proving yourself, getting to top, and then people would scout you and you would get picked up for a bigger market. So maybe your third or fourth jump is to Chicago or DC, like a really great place, and you make a name for yourself.
Right.
Nowadays, there's no money in it, and no one can scout to find people at a smaller market. There's not that farm team system anymore.
Right.
It's simply voice tracked all over the place. So you'll hear Rush Limbaugh on 17,000 stations.
Right.
And on top of that, the barrier to entry, that person who would have had to hone their skills market to market, that's gone. You can just be some asshole with his shithead improv teacher in a fucking room blathering into these two microphones.
On a podcast of all places.
And nothing stands between you and saying, I too am Howard Stern.
Exactly. Right.
And
it's
gone that way in a lot of fields. And
yeah,
I guess to what your friend Whoopi said, I'm not, as much as I love improv and I love performing it, I digest the results of improv. Like, I'll watch Anchorman 100 fucking times.
Right.
But I'm not going to sit there for the most part. I am the enemy. I have declared war upon you and your way of life.
I get it. It's even, I think Bob Odenkirk said this in a really candid interview like 2 or 3 years ago.
David Cross is a cunt.
That was how he opened the interview.
Nice.
He closed it with David Cross is a fucking cunt.
David Cross must be destroyed.
Yeah, that's right. But in between those two bookended statements, he said that, he sees improv as nothing but a parlor trick. That improv for him, became a means to an end, a means to crafting sketches. I love it to death.
I'm not being cute here. Not that I could. I'm fat.
Fat guys are cute, and you're not fat.
That's true.
Yeah, that's right.
About one of those things. Improv to me is the opposite of sex. I love performing it. It's my happy place to perform it. I don't care to watch when other people do it.
I can understand that. And yeah, it's just sort of a reality that I think that we're bumping up against. That which is I'm sorry.
Your teams are great. Like what you bring to that theater, I love your performances. And I'm not saying other people are bad. I'm just saying it's this weird cusp for me in improv where if you're below that cusp, I'm kind of like a lot of times I'm rolling my eyes. I'm just like, okay, I see where you're going with this. And then when you break through and it's someone just smashing it as you tend to do with your performances and especially the group you got together like 3 or 4 weeks ago with your New York buddy who isn't Whoopi Goldberg, Tim Martin,
yeah.
And a couple other folks.
Right, very talented people on this
scene. It's magical when you see it executed well. But yeah, below that, you're like...
Ugh. You know, you were talking about how entry to radio is now... you know, relatively low. And my friend, Whoopi, and mm-hmm. I were talking about the same thing as well. And I was in another scene. I was in Chicago, and another friend of mine in Chicago mentioned the same thing. That you know, there are so many opportunities to go perform that you can just, if you, you know, and there's so many, even in our own city, you know, there isn't a bar out there that isn't offering comedy. Mm-hmm. You know, I may have made this statement before, but I have a theory that a bar is going to open up on...
I have a punch card for every time you say this.
Okay, cool.
Please finish the thought because I got a small Coke.
Okay, cool. have I said it before? Because I'll say it again.
I fucking like hearing it, though. Right. It's a good
point. Yeah, there's someday a bar is going to open on U Street that's going to say, we are 100% comedy free. And because these spaces are so prevalent that getting on stage or getting in front of an audience, even that audience is even if this audience has it forced upon them, it's sort of a guerrilla audience. You know, a bunch of unsuspecting people are going to have an improv troupe pop up and they're just trying to enjoy a goddamn drink, right? There's all kinds of opportunities for that. And it used to not be that way. Like when I was coming up, I was talking about this with my other friend in Chicago. When I was coming up, you know, there was... You'd be in a scene, you know, in some sort of metropolitan area with, you know, there'd be one or two troupes.
Okay.
And generally one space to play. And it wasn't even like, it would have been like a black box theater or maybe some other theatrical entity would say, yeah, you can use our space on an off night. And you go see these troupes and it'd be magnificent, right? But when I was coming up, you know, the only things to do, the only things I wanted to do were, A, take classes and meet other people, meet other mm-hmm. like-minded weirdos like myself.
And be Smash Poon.
And be Smash Poon. Smash tons and tons of Poon. Then there was a
episode
C.
title.
Then there was a C, which was go see improv. And because you sort of knew, you know, that that's a good place to learn. A good place to go see it, right? But you knew that what you were watching and what you were seeing, that your journey was pretty steep. You had to sort of like work and work and work and work before you would, A, get the attention of that troupe that was sort of like the king shit in that scene. Mm-hmm. And then would say, oh my God, hey, you guys have a good troupe. You're going to be on the bill with us? Or, you know, do you want to join our troupe, right?
I would love that.
And that's gone. It's like the second you walk out of an improv class in the city, and not even that, there's opportunities to play. And it's because bars are saying, yep, what the hell? Hey, yeah, come on, weirdos, come play. You'll bring an audience and we'll reap the benefits of that.
Well, I think that is almost a pedestrian enemy compared to what a YouTube or I'm trying to think what the hell else there is. Discord, all the game streaming shit that I remember if I weren't full of pills right now.
By the way, I have no idea what you're talking about. These games.
PC is a personal computer.
Okay. Well, wait a minute. Wait. So, do you have to put a disc inside to get it to start up? Because
yes,
in my day.
We're going to go to Radio Shack.
The Tandy 5000. I can't wait. I love it.
I have a spare Commodore 64 for you.
You used to have to put a cassette into a cassette deck and start it up.
Put the phone up to the receiver and you can dial into the World Wide Web.
Just like Matthew Broderick did in War Games.
Play a game. So, UCB, for those that don't know, the Upright Citizens Brigade is one of the, probably the biggest, I would say, improv theater in the country. They're based in New York. They have a satellite, or I guess you'd say
sister
campus in LA.
Yeah, I think it's between them and Second City isn't even really traditionally an improv comedy theater. They're more of a sketch comedy theater. Yeah.
Their whole shtick at UCB is you're going to pay $450 a clip mm-hmm. to go through our curriculum, which currently consists of a 101 through a 401.
Mm-hmm.
We might fail you on that 401 somewhat liberally, in fact.
Right.
So you're going to pay again.
Right.
Each of these takes 8 weeks. And then when you're done crawling through this minefield, it's not like, hey, here is your card that says you're famous. You get to perform every week.
Right.
I think, who was it? Griswold.
Right.
Chris Griswold that I put you in touch with.
Yeah.
He was saying they meant something like 600 people a year that go through the 401.
That makes perfect sense.
These are people that have committed, again, at minimum, let's say no transportation costs involved. Math major here, $1,800
right.
for they got that 401 the first time.
Right.
They then walk out and it's like 10 people a year.
Yeah.
Get regular performing slots.
Yeah.
I could do all that, Sean. I could do all that. Or I could just flip the fucking camera on button on my YouTube and see if shit sticks to a wall.
Yeah.
It's like there's guys, geniuses, who have had entire careers at UCB, and that fucking David the Dentist kid trashes the in terms of impressions those people have ever had.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And it's fucking,
yeah,
it is what you make of it. You know, it simply is.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, in 100, 200 years, they're going to take our brains and put them into Ninja Turtle Krang bodies, and maybe we will live forever.
Thank God.
Yes, we'll have ugly little weird tentacles and eyes on our brain and a mouth on our brain for some reason. But in the meantime, we're just going to die.
Yeah.
Like, all of us and everyone up till when we got here, we're just dying. And that's just what it is, man.
Yeah.
It's just making a Zen peace with it.
Yeah.
It, you know, so I love improv, but I guess I have made that mental leap where it's like, cool, I could crawl through broken glass and maybe, just maybe in 3 years, I'll be performing once a week in New York, or I get together with the talented people I know in this city.
Yeah.
And we do sketches and we try to put that shit out and see if some pasta sticks to the wall.
Yeah.
I would have said shit, but I'm trying to keep it classy. And Sicilian. Not synonymous. Mm. Yeah, so I don't know. I wouldn't feel bad. I think we're going to do some cool things with the theater. Maybe the improv alone aspect of it isn't there, but
yeah, and that's the conclusion I've reached over the last couple of months. I mean, people have probably listened to me talk about this, so I won't bore them much longer, but yeah, it's just we're offering other things now. We're offering storytelling classes and fiction writing classes. One of my former students is a gifted fiction writer, and she's offering a workshop in September. So it's I think we're going to become more of a learning space than exclusively an improv comedy space. But you know, it wasn't for want of trying that, you know, we tried to make it succeed.
No, it's great. And
it wasn't for want of effort either.
Yeah, and I think personally, you can either try to capture what was, or you can kind of be at the vanguard of what could be.
Right.
And if it fails, there's a scene in Goodfellas I'd like you to watch where they burn a club down after racking up a whole lot of debt on some credit.
Well, you know, and
fucking shame, too.
Yeah, but that first Joe Pesci would have to come and beat the shit out of me because I thought he was funny or something like that.
That's true. Yeah, no, you would have tried to collect on a debt
that's
in
right,
front
that's
of his
right,
friends.
That's right.
And he would have grabbed you by the tie and said, "You're a real piece of shit," and smashed a bottle. And autism scene. Yeah. So I hope you come back charged from Burning Man. We'll get to Burning Man in a second.
Okay.
We'll tease that shit.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Hell, this weekend, you and I are pow-wowing.
That's right.
To see what exactly we can film in the space.
That's right, mate.
I said snuff films. You guys wanted to do comedy.
No, I think I wanted to do Gilbert and Sullivan. And
uh-huh.
Your friend Tim,
yeah,
wanted to do Shaw. He wanted to do George Bernard Shaw.
Okay,
but
yeah, and I was just like,
I think we're gonna go with the snuff films.
I was like, you guys have seen the end of every episode of Dexter, right? That was a big hit, but it was a little fake. This is a very plastic friendly room. Let's do that shit. All right, so I'm going to just say it. From my perspective, you disappear every year into the desert for like 2 weeks.
That's right.
Live like some sort of Bedouin. Like, I just picture you with like a scimitar, maybe just a scimitar and a belt. That's
top of the list of what you have to bring to Burning Man.
You're just nude except for Aladdin shoes
that
curl up.
And a scimitar.
Yeah.
Which you'd think would be a little, you know, dangerous, but still.
Somehow penis intact. Yeah.
That's the whole point. Yeah.
And you kind of just fall off the face of the earth, and you typically come back recharged,
mm-hmm.
blood content, probably 40% peyote. I'm not asking, but you seem happy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, for those of us that don't really know what the hell Burning Man is, because I like how you live your life. That's all I can say, because I would just get people calling me in the desert like, hey, I'm locked out of my house. I'm like, sorry, I'm finding myself.
No, no. And you would say, all right, I'll be there. I can be there in a day.
I would be there until my very first call.
First, the Molly has to leave my system. Then I have to drive for 2.5 hours to Reno.
I've taken so many pills and I'm so dehydrated I'm pissing rock candy.
That's right.
But once that's happened,
I'll be there to help you get make sure that your dog door is
and
secure.
Halfway on the flight back, they'll be like, oh, false alarm. We got someone else. So tell me, what is in store for this year at Burning Man and how it changes your life and why all of us should hate you for the fact that you go there?
Oh, I doubt. I don't think you should hate me. I don't think you should hate or envy me. Especially if you don't like to work, because it's interesting. I mean, like, I'm literally, after this podcast is over, I'm going to get back on the computer. I'm going to send like 900 other emails and manage the theater. That's going to keep going until
you get that many penis enlargements.
I guess it's weird, right? And I have to respond to all of them. It's just a thing, right?
No, thank you. But thanks for email.
Thank you for email. But I'll be doing that literally until the moment I leave on Monday afternoon.
Oh,
then
shit.
I'm going to get on a plane and fly out to Reno. Run all over Reno, doing nothing but running errands, getting supplies and stuff for the festival.
Shooting men, watching them die.
Yeah, exactly. Driving out to caravanning along with approximately 30,000 to 40,000 other people up a one-lane or a two-lane road.
So wait, you guys, Reno is not where it's at.
No.
You and a bunch of people get together in Reno.
Approximately, yeah. Like that's sort of like the base camp for everyone, right? Where you go and you supply up to include everything from whatever you're going to need to survive in an atmosphere in which there's no infrastructure, no running water, no electricity, no Wi-Fi, no cell phone. You can't buy or sell anything out there. Basically, just
you have to barter and shit.
It's not really even really bartering. It's called gifting.
Okay.
It sounds like a platitudinous, high minded way of saying bartering. But I've never traded something for somebody else. I've never something. Hey,
you've never slave traded.
Give me that concubine there. I will give you three.
The women. How much for your little girls?
I want the women. Take my horses, but not the good one. Not patchouli. I will need her.
Come here, Bucephalus.
Bucephalus, that's right. Who's Alexander the Great's horse? That's right. You and I are both classically educated.
We've seen all the Three Stooges.
I've never traded anything. I've never said, "Oh, you need water." Mm. Well, you've got some ramen noodles. Okay, it's not like that. Usually people bring out stuff, everything they need. It's called radical self. It's one of the principles of Burning Man: radical self reliance. Take care of yourself.
Okay, cool.
And then if somebody comes up, the mentality behind that is, if you have everything you need, you can pretty much gift this stuff.
I got you.
You can go, oh, look. Hey, can I borrow some? Can I borrow some water? Of course, you can have some water. Take as much as you need because we have enough. We're fine.
Right? I was gonna say, yeah. You painted a picture where people just show up and they're like, "Wow, I am parched."
There are people who do show up.
Where's the sink?
And there are people who show up significantly unprepared. But what they discover is A, their mistake pretty quickly, but B, they also discover that there's a whole community of people there who will help them out and take care of them in some way. But going back to the why you shouldn't envy, because I'll be at the festival, so drive two-lane road, sit in traffic for, it's probably between 4 to 6 hours in the middle of the desert road that leads into what's called the Black Rock Desert, which is a national park. Every year the festival gets a permit to have the festival there. But it's a desert. There are mountains on both sides, and it's dry as shit. It's a desert. It's not like a hard like cake, you know, like those, you see those ruts and stuff like that. It's nothing like that. It's relatively smooth, but it's fucking hot. So you'll sit there for 4 to 6 hours before you're even in the festival. Once you're in the festival, if you're part of a camp, which can be as small as like two or three, and as large as like 200, 500, 300, 400 people. That's how large camps are out there. Well, then you have to go and or you don't have to, but you're expected to go and help build put the infrastructures in place that can sustain your camp, to include everything from shade structure to the kitchen area to, you know, whatever that looks like.
Right? So you guys ripped off Minecraft.
That's right. Exactly. Is that what it is? I have no idea what you just said, but yes, that's exactly what we just
said. It was a code to my handler.
That's right. So it's the first 3 or 4 days, 5 or 6 days that I'm there, I'm working my ass off. And I'm working my ass off under conditions that are like 105, 106, 107.
Now, is this part of the festival proper, or this is like preamble time?
That's preamble to the festival, but okay. Everyone's doing it, right?
I was going to say, it sounds in essence like everyone who's going to be there, or a lot of them are already there.
The festival doesn't start until I'll leave on Monday the 20th. The festival doesn't start until Sunday the 26th. I guess it's the 26th.
Yeah.
That's when it starts at like 11 o'clock in the morning. The festival officially starts, and then it goes for the entire week until the following Monday, the Monday after Labor Day. But, you know, and it's, you know, and again, a lot of stuff happens out there. A lot of fantastic, weird, wild, obtuse, whatever adjectives you want to use to do. But at the same time that you're there experiencing some of that stuff, you still have to maintain yourself and maintain your camp. You have responsibilities. I mean, seriously, I mean, it's hard work just getting up in the morning sometimes because, A, you may have been out too late the night before and you don't have much sleep. But also, I mean, it's just you're in the desert and it's hot and there's work to be done. You know,
hey, put yourself in a real shithole.
It's a harsh
environment.
Listen, this is not going and lying on a beach in the Caribbean or the Caribbean, depending on how you pronounce
nice.
It. I want to go to both those places.
Well,
thank God, because JetBlue goes to all those places. But you're working your ass off. It's hard work. It really is. But I mean, in between the hard work, there's some fantastic things and wonderful, cool things to do.
So there's
see,
okay. So you're getting to hang and interact with these people while
right.
you do a lot of structure building that
right,
first
right.
week.
Right.
Then from the 26th on, how long does it run? 26th till when?
Till the thing we all go to see burn burns on
uh-huh.
Saturday night. The temple, which is built annually, burns on Sunday night. And then the next day is when people start packing up and leaving. The festival's over on that next day.
So this is going to be like 2.5 weeks. You're going
approximately
kinda,
2.5 weeks.
Wow.
Most of it's spent, in the middle of the desert. To include, you know, let's be candid. We're talking about 105 degrees during the day, 35 to 40 degrees at night.
Wow.
This is in the middle of the desert. So there's dust storms, there's wind storms. Occasionally it rains. Which turns the entire festival muddy for about an hour, and then of course the sun comes out and bakes it dry. But during that time, everything shuts down. You cannot move. I mean, cars cannot move. The art cars that crisscross the festival can't move. Everything sits down until you hear from the festival organizers. Yep, green is cleared. Mud is dry. You can now drive on the playa. So yeah.
So people do have like weird Mad Max cars that they.
Not only do they have Mad Max cars, there is an actual Thunderdome at Burning Man.
Powered by pig shit?
No, but that would be awesome if it were. But I'm not kidding. If you go online and Google Death Cult.
And do you just like Nerf bat each other? Like
they have these huge pugil sticks, pugil. Whatever the Marines use.
Okay.
Pugil sticks, is that what they're called?
I don't know, I'm picturing American Gladiators right now.
Yeah, those things.
Okay.
Right? And they have these big swings, and it literally is a dome where it's scaffolding, and people climb up. There's literally people like.
So it just is thunder, yeah.
Right. And that's one small thing that happens at Burning Man.
Wow.
But these people look like they just walked out of Mad Max, out of the Outback.
That is very...
Yeah. And that's just, again, that's one camp. There are, you know, hundreds if not thousands of small camps that have their own themes, right? That have, you know, other things to do. And it's gifting. Like Death Cult's camp is Thunderdome. If you want to go into Thunderdome, you can go into Thunderdome. Whoever's next, come on in. You're in. You're in Thunderdome.
Wow.
And you can. It goes all day and all night. You can. I'm sorry. Let me correct that. It's not generally not open during the day. It's a little too hot. But at night, it goes all fucking night until dawn.
That sounds fun.
They are
And yet none of this is filmed. Is that part of the thing? Or,
oh, no. I mean, people, if again, if you go...
I'd watch Thunderdome live stream.
Google Burning Man, you know, there's all kinds of videos that are out there.
Okay.
And all kinds of photo streams. And by people who are, like, world-class photographers. Like, you...
Well, because it attracts the best of the best.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. But to be honest, every single photo stream, every single video I've ever seen... doesn't do justice to it because it just cannot capture
the smell,
but B, the sheer scale and scope of the event. It's huge. It's fucking huge. I've never seen, and probably never will see anything like it.
I've definitely.
It literally is momentarily one of the seven wonders of the modern world. That for 1 week out of every year, this city pops out of the dust. And it's not just a city, it's a fully functioning city full of art and dance and music and life and culture and events, orgies.
Thank God.
Yeah, I mean, you name it. You know, you could find it in Burning Man. Whatever you're looking for, you could pretty much find.
Orgy and massive dehydration. That's just peanut butter and chocolate
And those are the only two of the very small experiences you can have at Burning Man. You know, there's spiritual enlightenment, there's events.
What kind of orgies?
I actually teach an improv class there.
That's awesome.
I teach an improv class at our camp. We get it's on Tuesday of the festival, Tuesday at 2:00. So it's the second day of the festival, or the third day of the festival officially. And we get 50 to 60, 70 people who show up in our small camp, a space about as big as the room that we're in here. And I teach them an improv class. I teach them just improv games and improv structure.
I hope that you just assume a massive amount of knowledge, and it's like, okay, this is how to work on your Herald.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to do two-person scenes. I hope all 70 of you are ready. Now, I teach them a lot of short-form games, stuff that some of them might be familiar with. But the idea is just to have them have fun. But, there's also, you know, costumes, and people don't really wear them. I've taught improv to naked people, half-naked myself, so...
Hey, man, is that like one balls out?
Or... That's right, yeah.
Whenever dude says half naked, I'm like, I don't know. Are you wearing a t-shirt, like blue?
Yes.
Just t-shirt and a cap.
Yeah, and I don't think I've done justice to the festival when I just, whatever diatribe I just...
No, it sounds amazing. It sounds like a place you can go, and if you can get out of your head, you can discover a lot about yourself.
Yeah.
I have that white trash background where for a couple days at least, I just be like, where do I shit? I just saw a feller's dingle. And, you know, maybe like a week in, I'd be counting petals and stuff like that.
Right. And being open to the,
Exactly.
Yeah. Open to the experience.
Just why are you crying, John? It's so beautiful.
It really is. Yeah. It really is very, my wife has said, Burning Man is the only place one of the only places on the planet where you can be at your absolute best and at your absolute worst during that sort of short compressed time span. It really is a sort of a metaphor for it's a big, huge, living 70,000 person metaphor for how we operate in the world, like our own journey. Right? Mm-hmm. It's ephemeral. It's we think that we're situated in time. We discover that time is going to have its way with us. You know, the products and things that we're creating, our projects, our endeavors, our ambitions, our goals, they're just going to go up in a puff of smoke as if they were never even here.
So that is, you guys create during that, I guess, 8-day period, and then the big finale is you just burn all that shit.
For the most part.
Okay.
What you discover when you get out there is like I'm trying to do my best to describe it. There's like a half circle, nearly a half circle from like 10 p.m. on the clock to 2 p.m. on the clock that sort of surrounds the festival.
Okay.
And these are the encampments. This is where almost all 70,000 people are camping in this area. And the streets are sort of like numbered and lettered, right? So I'm at 430 and Gort. I know it's a weird name for a street, but the Gort is for the G.
Okay.
So as you go out from the concentric circle, the streets are sort of lettered A, B, C, D.
Okay.
And then the streets are on like a time, like I'm at 430, so that's be 430 on the clock. So anyone looking for me would know that I have to go to where 430 would be approximately and G and find me, right? Because there's no Wi-Fi, I can't text people, I can't do any of that.
Sounds liberating.
But outside of all that, past that, first you have like the man who sits at the center of the festival, and on the Saturday night, this huge construction. It's literally one of the biggest things, perhaps the biggest thing on the festival. He's like 10, 15 stories high.
Jesus.
He's going to be burned. They're going to burn them, right? And which means that people, to see the craftsmanship that went into building this thing, a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of energy, a lot of thought, a lot of design, a lot of trial and error, a lot of work went into building this thing. It's going to go.
It's going to go. Shit.
And then out past the man is what's called the temple. And the temple is built annually every year, and it sort of reflects the theme of the festival. And again, it's same deal. In fact, if the man is easy the design's not going to change much for the man, but the design for the temple changes every year. And there have been some like absolutely stunningly, architecturally, aesthetically gorgeous pieces of art. They're art you can walk around in, huge edifices. And on Sunday night,
picturing the place getting a corporate sponsor. The temple theme is McDonald's.
The theme last year was Leonardo's workshop. The theme before that was cargo cult.
Okay.
The theme before that was something else, right? This year's theme is iRobot. Whatever that means to you.
Just pictures of Will Smith everywhere.
Exactly right. But the this entity, this gorgeous temple, is going to be destroyed. It's going to be like burned.
Yeah. Fuck, that gets me sad.
And those are the two main things that get burned. Outside of that, past that, in what's known as Deep Playa, are huge, gorgeous art projects that people bring out there. Lights and like there was a huge Victrola, a big huge gargantuan Victrola.
Okay.
That was out there last year.
Those are the old timey record player,
yeah, exactly,
right?
The horn. Huge, yeah, exactly right. That played music, and you could direct it to play music.
Wow.
And again, that's just one small example. All these pieces were set out there by artists. They're set out in the middle of the fucking desert in a place that's really hard to get to. And again, it just, you go, what the fuck? How did this get out here? All the work and thought and planning that must have gone on. And that's an example of the gifting thing that I was talking about, which is people are gifting this experience to you. And you are gifting that. You're gifting your experience of you in the festival in other ways. And people bring all kinds of stuff just to gift, just to give away.
You mean the way I've gifted this podcast?
Exactly. Right. Because you're literally giving it
away. Surely I haven't fucking profited off
it. You haven't monetized it at all. So that's if you want to change the subject, don't ever get a burner talking about Burning Man. He or she will never shut the fuck up.
No, it's okay. I mean, like, if I ever have to mice and men kill you, I'll just be like, hey, tell me about the statue.
Well, George.
Why are you crying? No, it's just, keep going. The temples. Oh, man. No, I am genuinely jealous, man, that you're going to get to go out there and do a couple weeks and come back, hopefully recharged as fuck, and then...
Yeah, that's usually what happens.
Capitalist as shit, and yeah, making some money on YouTube, man.
That's right.
Yeah, just fucking just a pay-per-click channel describing everything you saw out there. Oh, that would make me happy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm limited in my desires. But that's cool. You got that on the horizon. Right. I hope you're... Are you feeling better than you were at the start of the hour?
Yeah, measurably better. Yeah.
Okay. So the PCP's kicked in.
Exactly.
Good. All right, man. Well, I wanted to get that. I want to do a before and an after on the Burning Man.
All right. I'd be happy to help to share that with you. So.
And in the meantime, if you want to come out, you've got what going on this Friday, which is what date?
Friday the 17th.
Okay.
We have, three troops at the Unified Scene Theater to include, the Artless Bards, which is our Shakespearean improv troupe. By the way, I'm not saying this just because I'm a member of this troupe. They are a really good troupe.
And yeah.
They do unique improv that you don't see a lot of on the scene.
I'm not kissing your ass for free classes, but I am.
It's a lot of fun. It's amazing. They're going to be joined by a troupe that grew up out of our theater, or out of our classes, called Padsworth. Very talented.
Padsworth?
Padsworth.
Okay.
Very talented three-person troupe. And also playing in is a new troupe, relatively new troupe on the scene called Colossus, which is a Greek word. Maybe you know what's a Greek word for
it. I know Yamisu, which means fuck you.
Yeah, well, then, there we are. And then Saturday night we have our 24-hour sketch fest, so our second annual.
That is a full slate. So again, this weekend, DC, I think both shows starting 8 p.m., right?
Both shows do start at 8 p.m.
But if you get there at 7:30, everyone will be busy and you can egg the windows.
Do it.
Perfect crime. Well, Sean Westfall, you're at Sean Westfall and at Unified Scene DC, I believe, on both Insta and Twitter.
That's correct.
And Like the Theater on Facebook, mm-hmm. and privately stalk Sean on Facebook as
Please
well.
Please do.
You can't like him, but you can just DM him stuff. Mm-hmm. Just send him pictures of your bared ass and be like, hey, remember Burning Man? This is me. I'm John Papagiorgio. In papasbasement.com is the website because some piece of shit has squatted Papa's basement for 10 years now. One of these days, they will die, and I will have justice. That's what can I say? I learned comeuppance from Chuck Norris. People die, I get what I want.
Exactly.
At Papa's Basement on Twitter and Instagram. Find it on Facebook. Like us on iTunes. Subscribe. YouTube. Patreon. That's how you give me money.
Oh, yeah.
Papa's Basement Patreon.
Guys, give Papa Giorgio money. He's
Do
awesome.
It. Please. Thank you. He said it, not me. That makes it real. Till the next one, we're out of here. And yeah, we'll catch up with you.
Looking forward to it.
I stumbled over the outro I do every goddamn episode. But I can't wait to have you back. You'll be tanned, looking like, what's that motherfucker with the watches? George, what is it?
George Clooney?
Not George. Oh, goddamn it. Not George Plimpton either. There's a tanned, maybe. George Hamilton.
That's
there
right.
we go.
That's
yeah.
Right.
The hot dog skin crow's feet and shit, but you'll be looking money and relaxed. All right. We are out of here.